Welcome back to Public Address Radio and Radio Live. Today marks the end of Sea Week. No doubt for the past 7 days, most of you have been running around learning all about and experiencing the joy of Tangaroa. But in case you haven't, we've invited along Professor John Montgomery, the Director of Auckland University's Lee Laboratory, to talk about it. Well, John, thank you very much for coming along. So tell me, first of all, about Sea Week, what you know about that.
So Sea Week is a once-a-year opportunity to expose people to the sea and get people excited about our coasts and beaches.
I've been involved in the past down in Wellington with the Sea Week, things like they do things like marine bio blitzes and whatnot, don't they? Where they go and everyone goes and finds as many different species of living things as they can and sort of count all that sort of stuff up. What's been happening this year that you're aware of?
So it depends very much where you are. It's a kind of a local community-based week, and activities are put on by a whole variety of folk around the theme of Sea Week. So up at Lee and Goat Island in the Marine Reserve, there's been a snorkel activity which has been arranged there so people can get in and experience the Marine Reserve.
Got postponed, I think, the first time, didn't it, because of the bad weather. You don't want to lose any snorkelers up there, do you, when you're trying to get people out to experience the ocean?
No, and a bit of swell stirs it up as well, so it's not quite the experience you'd want either.
So you're based up at Lee, but it's the Lee Laboratory for the Auckland University. Yep. So why does Auckland University have a laboratory at Lee? I mean, is it part of the Marine Reserve?
The lab is up at Goat Island, and the site was originally selected in the 60s by members of the biology department at the University of Auckland. And in fact, the Marine Reserve came after that and was at the instigation of some of those staff. I suspect initially with a view to protecting some of the research that was going on up there, but it's an idea that's kind of taken off and generated life of its own.
So why is Lee so important? Why not have it just down the road at the viaduct?
Okay. I mean, if you look around the world, marine reserves tend to be either in city locations, large institutes, and they've got ocean-going vessels that go out to sea from there, or they're in kind of pristine and isolated environments. And we're really lucky at Auckland that we're only an hour north of the main city, but we've got the pristine environment right there.
I've been going up to Lee snorkeling all my life, and that building has always had a very enigmatic quality to me. There's some very harsh signs and lots of trespass notices. It's a revelation to know there's actual people doing good work up there.
Well, you're taking that on my word, of course. But we're well aware of that, and we haven't been set up for visitors at all. We're a research station. So there hasn't truthfully been much to see unless you'd gone round in a guided tour with somebody. But we're in the business of changing that. So by the end of this year, there will be a visitor centre associated with the laboratory.
Maybe take down some of those harshly worded signs.
Yeah, we'll try and make the signage a little more attractive and more welcoming.
Do you ever nip down to the beach for a bit of inspiration? Put your mask and snorkel on and jump in? Or
no, I make a pact with myself every summer that I'll plan to get down there at lunchtimes. But it doesn't happen. Just get too busy. But I get out and do some photography in the reserve from time to time.
Tell me about the work that you do. I mean, you work in a quite a curious area. Neuroethology, is that what it's called?
Neuroethology, that's correct.
Which is to do with the senses of fish. Tell me about that.
So, neuroethology is sort of broken off from neuroscience, really looking at the nervous system, and ethology is the basis of behaviour. So it's how the brain and the sense organs contribute to the behaviour of animals. And neuroethology takes the whole spectrum. There's a lot of work done on bats, for instance, some of these really amazing creatures that are around and how they do what they do. But being marine-oriented, my interest is in the sensory systems of fish and how that contributes to behaviour.
Can you tell me something? As a diver, I noticed that when you've got a large school of fish, particularly smaller fish, but it can be any, that when you move towards them, 1,000 of them all in perfect unison move from left to right and flick and dart and all at the same time in exactly the same manner. How does that work?
Yeah, that's interesting. That schooling behaviour is a predator avoidance behaviour. So if they're being under attack by something larger, and they consider you as a diver probably in that category, they coordinate their movements to really fool the predators. And I mean, I must admit, I wasn't that convinced till I saw some really good video footage of a marlin bringing up a school of bait fish from the bottom, and that marlin was trying to break the school up and to get into them, and the coordination of the school and the confusion effect of it, the marlin was simply unable to take anything.
But how do they, because there's not one leader going, okay guys, on my count, everybody go left, one, two, left. It's so instantaneous and so similar. How did the, is it just because yeah, no, they're all acting on exactly the same piece of instinct?
I mean, that's a really good question. And there's a bunch of cues that the animals use. Some of it's based on colour. I mean, you know, those midwater fish are kind of highly reflective. So as they change the position in the water, they'll change colour. And those colour signals are used as part of the coordination of the schooling. And the other sense that fish have that we don't know much about is the lateral line. It's a hydrodynamic sense. So a fish swimming in amongst a whole school of others can sense the movements of the fish of its nearest neighbour, and if it turns towards it, it'll get that signal in turn as well. So they act as a coordinated body, but you're right, there is no leader. It's just a set of rules that make that happen.
Because it's intriguing when you're in the, midst of it and you see it happening and you're just going, wow, that's, yeah. Okay, and you've also done, and this is probably more relevant to the theme of Sea Week this year, which is Fish for the Future, a bit of work tagging, looking at populations and conservation of fish populations, is that right?
Yes, so Fish for the Future, I mean, marine reserves certainly have a role to play in that, and some of the research that we're doing at the lab at the moment is looking at the extent to which the marine reserves act as a larval source for the fisheries outside. So we're trying to track the larvae from the marine reserve and to see to what extent and how important that kind of cross-subsidy into the fishery is. New Zealand's actually got a pretty good inshore fisheries management regime, so that's working pretty well from a sustainable point of view. And some of our research interest is also focused on what we call highly migratory species, tuna and marlin, looking at the movements, because clearly once they get outside New Zealand's jurisdiction, they're subject to fishing pressure from other places. So it's important to know what they do, where they go, and where they are at particular times of the year.
Are you concerned about the, you know, the level of fishing, I mean, internationally, about the fishery stocks internationally? Are we really heading towards a sort of zero fish end game?
I'm not as pessimistic as that, to be frank. I think there are areas of the ocean that are seriously under pressure. And you can see in certain places the displacement of that fishing pressure into other areas. So through the 90s, a lot of the European and some of the Asian fishing fleets shifted their attention into Africa. There are kind of certainly stocks and areas that are struggling. As I say, the inshore fishery in New Zealand is doing pretty well. In New Zealand, when you look globally here and a couple other places like Alaska, that northeast coast of North America, the fisheries are being managed and sustainability seems to be part of that.
You mentioned that it's the inshore fisheries is quite well managed here. I mean, how does that take effect in terms of when people go out fishing? Is it just limits on numbers, or is it a bit more complicated than that, or...?
It's complicated. It's split between the kind of commercial fishery and the recreational fishery. So for the recreational fishery, they're usually bag size, so there's a limit to the number of snapper that you can take.
9. 27 centimetres, 9. Yeah.
Good. For the commercial fishery, there's a whole exercise based on doing stock assessments to see how many fish are there and how many can be taken. And then that total allowable catch is divided up against the various stakeholders.
I was talking to Dr. Russell Norman from the Greens co-leader this week, and we were discussing fishing. And I said, look, I always figure if I go out on a boat fishing, if there's snapper out there and I catch them, then there must be enough for me to catch. You know, by definition, I'm not sort of dragging big nets through the water and things like that. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, I'm a keen fisherman myself, and I can't remember the last time I actually caught a bag limit. I tend to go out and catch what I want and head back again. And I think there's a whole changing ethos around that. People you talk to on the boat ramp are putting some of the larger fish back, which we think are probably important in terms of the spawning pool,
right?
And taking what they want. And I think provided we keep heading down that track, we're doing all right.
What about shellfish? Do you have anything to do with that? Since we're talking about things that I like to eat in the sea?
Not much from a research point of view, but I mean, we've got some interesting things happening locally up at Lea in the Whangateao Harbour. Where there has been a bit of a cockle die-off over the last few years, and there's a ban on collecting going in there.
Is there anywhere to go in terms of perceiving the senses of shellfish? I mean, do they have them in the traditional sense? Or?
No, I mean, shellfish have some interesting things, but not much in the way of sensory side of things. One of the things I like, and I don't even know whether it happens here particularly, but they're very good at sequestering poisons and putting them into parts of the siphon and things to protect them from getting their siphons nipped off and those sorts of things. So lots of interesting games being played out there, but not at a sensory level, probably not so much with shellfish.
Look, just one last question. Thank you so much for talking to us. It's been very interesting. I just want to know, with all your expertise, I mean, obviously you've been working in this field for years, can you tell me one place to go to get some crayfish?
It'd cost you.
Look, thank you so much for coming in. We look forward to maybe later in the year, maybe taking a tour of the Lee Laboratory when it becomes more open to the public. That's Professor John Montgomery, Director of Auckland University's Lee Laboratories, talking about Sea Week. Coming up after the break, Taika Waititi and Simon takes a trip to the farmers markets.